Hello and welcome to The Deep Dive. I'm Larry Kamer. The Deep Dive is an in-depth discussion on some of the most important issues facing Napa County and wine country. On our program, we try to present insights, stories, and perspectives you might not hear anywhere else. You may have noticed we've been off the air for a while, about 7 weeks, since our studios at KVON in Napa were restricted at the beginning of the lockdown to essential employees. But I'm happy to say that we are back. We're producing remotely, interviewing folks remotely, and leaving it all to the great Nate Campbell back at KVON to make this all sound as professional as it possibly can. Our new shows will begin to air again every Thursday at 9 o'clock. I'm happy to report that we are now on every major podcast platform, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, all your favorite platforms, and on our website at kvon.com. If you want to find us on those podcast platforms, just look for Deep Dive Show with Larry Kamer. I'm very happy to hear from you and especially welcome your suggestions about future conversations and possible guests. Drop us a note at deepdiveshow@winedownmedia.com. That's W-I-N-E, Winedown Media. Or you can hit us up on Twitter and Instagram at Deep Dive Show. And while you're online, we'd sure appreciate it if you like us on our Facebook page, also Deep Dive Show. I have a couple of thoughts off the top before we get to our interview with John Dunbar, who is the mayor of Yountville, and I think more importantly in these days, the chair of the California League of Cities, an organization that represents more than 500 cities and towns across California. And cities and towns are really bearing the brunt of the coronavirus crisis. I had this quaint idea for episode 10, now 7 weeks ago, mid-March, to look into this new thing called the coronavirus. We talked to Napa County's health officer, Dr. Karen Relucio, and the medical director for Queen of the Valley Hospital, Dr. Amy Harold. It's safe to say that each of them has become a lot busier since then, probably a lot more famous. At the time of the podcast, though, our country was, to lots of people's disbelief, shutting down. We were at the front end of states of emergency, travel bans, cancellation of sporting events and conventions, and other things that at the time seemed unheard of. And of course, we've had much more dramatic activity since then. Even then, even at the beginning of this crisis, as we were recording that coronavirus show in March, the federal government had been slow out of the gate. It continued to speak with multiple and often contradictory voices. Its messages were full of blame, finger pointing, and I wondered on that show in March if the government was losing sight of its most important role, which is to protect people's lives and safety and to give people the information they needed on a timely basis to make decisions about their lives and health and safety. We fast forward now, we're in early May, and unfortunately, 70,000 people have died of the coronavirus in the United States. That is significantly more than all of the deaths in the Vietnam War. Now, I was alive and aware, I wasn't old enough to fight in the Vietnam War, but certainly was well aware that 70,000 deaths in a period of weeks, that surpasses 60-some thousand deaths that took more than a decade in that war. So it's just a shocking number, very, very hard to process. As is the number locally. We've had 74 of our neighbors in Napa County affected by the coronavirus and unfortunately two confirmed deaths. Crisis situations, you know, I work with them all the time. This is what I do for a living. I teach crisis management, crisis communications. I work with companies and schools and organizations on how to plan for crises and how to get out of crises. But the one thing they teach us is what not to do, how not to handle a crisis. And, you know, while it's too early to draw conclusions, long-term conclusions about lessons learned here, I think it's pretty safe to say that the federal government's response on COVID-19 is going to provide us with a lot of indications of things we should never do again, and that we will be living those lessons for many years to come. Contrast that with a very high level of cooperation, collaboration we see here at the county level with the state and governors around the country of both political parties. And you see some real leadership in action. You see people making tough decisions against a lot of political pressure, although you do see others that have decided that even without a vaccine and without testing, it's going to be okay to kind of loosen the screws and let people get out more, open businesses. We'll see. But as we're recording this, the early indications are that those states that allow people to get out a little too early report upticks in the number of cases. I think it's rational, but I also think it's being borne out by the facts. All of us are fixated on the here and now. That's completely understandable. Our lives are so different than they were just a couple of months ago. So what I've been trying to do to keep myself from going crazy is not focus on the here and now, where there's not a lot I can do, but to take a look at what's coming next. What's the future going to look like? What changes are we going to see permanently? How are we going to live and work in an era of social distancing? What's going to happen to our kids in school and in college? How will we travel? And will we travel again? And when we do, you know, where are we going to go? I suppose the good news is no more middle seats on airplanes, but cold comfort against the fact that we can't really go anywhere right now. And what I really am going to focus on today is the impact on cities and towns. You know, cities and towns are important to all of us, big cities, small towns. Most of us in America live in a city or a town. Most of us depend on a city or a town for our healthcare, our livelihood, a place to live, where we live and where we die. And you can never overlook the importance of the idea of cities and what cities really need. My guest is John Dunbar. John is the chair of the California League of Cities. This is the organization that represents cities and towns across California. I think it's very impressive that the mayor of a town of less than 3,000 people is leading an organization of over 500 towns and cities. But John is actively involved in the coronavirus response, but also in leading our town and leading other towns, you know, providing leadership to other towns in California, advocacy to the legislature and the governor on what cities and towns are going to need to not only get out of this virus, but to repair the damage, especially the economic damage that's been done. So let's turn to that interview with John Dunbar right now. So I've been reading some dire forecasts about the future of towns and cities, not just in California, but as very ideas, as entities and very ideas. And here in California, the League of California Cities says that cities are facing a $7 billion revenue shortfall in the next 2 years, that 9 out of 10 cities will have to cut staff and reduce services if the state doesn't step in and help. Unfortunately, the chair of that organization, John Dunbar, is close by. He is our mayor here in Yountville, and John's been a member of our town council since 2004. Is that right?
That is correct.
John, thank you so much for joining us, and welcome to the Deep Dive. How are you?
Thank you.
How are you holding up?
Well, you know, it's it's not such a bad place to have to home isolate when you live in Yountville, I must admit, and the Napa Valley as a whole, because when we do need to get a little fresh air, we're able to go out and enjoy the natural beauty that we have in the valley. Yeah, it's a little strange when we are seeing our friends and neighbors and, you know, through the face masks and have our physical distancing, but you know, it's a way to get a little bit of stress relief while we're dealing with this pandemic. I know it's scary not knowing anything about this coronavirus really until the last couple of months. So it's, I think part of that is the fear of the unknown with this new virus.
So how, we'll get into the whole specific questions about cities and towns and California cities and towns in particular, but I guess my first question would be, how would you assess the state of our local response to the COVID-19 crisis?
Napa County has been very fortunate so far that we have not seen the types of positive infections as well as the serious, in particular, the number of deaths that we have seen in some of the other Bay Area counties as well as across the state. That in large part is due to the very good discipline that our public has been taking with complying with the Napa County as well as the state protocols. I think it is scary, though, as we continue to get more and more testing, we are hoping that those numbers don't go in the wrong direction. You know, just looking at the numbers, when we are able to test in the hundreds or thousands rather than the dozens, there's no question that we'll see more positives, but we will also continue to see the vast majority of folks not infected. And so it's those numbers that are critical. It's the percentage of the population that's infected and the capacity of our public health, not only our hospitals, but our public health workers to be able to handle and respond to the positives. And that's, we have been pretty fortunate to date here in Napa County.
So at the state level, you know, governors, a number of governors across the country are stepping in to fill, you know, what can only be called a leadership void at the national level. Governor Newsom has certainly raised his national profile through all this. How do you think the state government is responding to this crisis?
If you could imagine 482 cities trying to get everyone to agree on the policies and procedures, you can imagine how difficult it is for the governor as well as the legislature. We have 58 counties and 482 cities, and county public health officers, not all of them are employees of the county, but Dr. Relucio here in Napa County is. And they are the local authority that works with the state Department of Public Health. I think that the governor and all the task force members he's put in place have been very conscious, and I think a very appropriate way, to keeping public health and safety first and foremost. We are all seeing challenges now trying to get to the economic recovery phase, and we are seeing some of that as early as this weekend here in Napa County. But again, when you have almost 500 cities and towns with different circumstances, rural and urban, large city, small communities, coastal cities, mountain cities, some of the circumstances are different in those areas. And the governor has acknowledged that and has allowed some of the, what they're calling the local adaptation, so that here in Napa County, we don't have to act exactly the same way as, say, Los Angeles County or even San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. It's, and Yountville itself is a bit distinctive, as are, you know, towns throughout, tourist towns throughout California, in that we're heavily dependent on sales tax, TOT. I think you said it's something like 74% of our budget comes from tourism and trade. How are you and other mayors planning for the inevitable budget hit? Because, I mean, obviously our tourism has cratered How do you begin to plan for that?
Well, we in Yountville are very fortunate that we have had some very disciplined fiscal activity over the last many years. Not only have we been able to maintain balanced budgets, but we've been able to put reserves aside for, we used to call them rainy day funds. Now they're pandemic funds. And we are going to be able to get through this in Yountville, even though it is a significant financial hit to our revenues. We'll be able to get through this better than some cities that just haven't been able to put some of that fund reserve in place based on a variety of circumstances. So as you noted, we are not as reliant on property tax, for example, as most cities are. So they were much more adversely affected with the real estate recession and that crisis a decade ago. We weathered that relatively well.
Right.
And now the role is almost completely flipped because, yes, about 74% of our revenue is hotel tax and sales tax. And property tax is only about 14%. So we as a tourist-driven economy, not just Yountville, but Napa County, is seeing a significant impact. And we're projecting a couple million dollars in shortfalls the remainder of this budget year, which is wrapping up at the end of June, based on the impacts of those losses. We are already projecting $6 million next year if the circumstances remain the same and we are not seeing people come back into our restaurants, into our hotels. So we're projecting based on a June 1 kind of return to some level of business activity and revenue generation. That's still speculative, but we are hopeful now, especially because the governor has recognized that as soon as the next few days, some business sectors can reopen with certain safety protocols in place. And we are hoping to really accelerate that throughout Napa County.
What's your assumption as far as reopening of business and when you can begin to see the tax revenue curve kind of improving?
Well, as the governor has laid out the different sectors, kind of the low or moderate risk business operations, as well as the medium and higher risk, some of that based on the number of people that would be in close contact. For example, working backwards, we're not going to be seeing large public events like concerts and sporting events with fans probably for many months, assuming there is not a significant and rapid improvement in treatment, therapeutics, even a vaccine. The vaccine will, of course, be transformative, and we could really make a significant move back to what we used to call normal. Hmm. But in the meantime, we are seeing some of those lower risk businesses able to come back online. That would be a lot more delivery of retail. It's going to look a little weird if you're going to a florist and you can't potentially go into the business. Maybe you have to have pre-ordered and have them bring it to you, very much like what we've been seeing with some of our restaurants doing takeout service. Eventually, we're going to see patrons being able to go back into these stores. It could be over the next few days and weeks, given, again, health and safety protocols. And so how do you go into a clothing store where you're used to being able to touch the merchandise and feel the fabrics and maybe even try on something? Will you still be allowed to do that? Or is that too much of a risk factor because you may be asymptomatic and not realize you've just left a garment there that has now been infected with the virus? So there are those very practical concerns we're looking at. Of course, for us, restaurant activity is critical, wine tasting rooms, and just kind of the whole hospitality sector in general. And so we have a lot of really smart people in the business community that have been working on this strategy for weeks. Each of our Chambers of Commerce CEOs have been communicating with each other, as well as business leaders up and down the valley. And so there has been significant progress that has already been made on these kinds of protocols, mm-hmm. whether it be in the wine industry. How do you have appointments for tastings, and how do you act that way? How are we going to invite people back into a restaurant to have in-house dining? And so it's going to look different for a while, but yep. we're going to be able to get back to that hopefully in the very near future.
So much of what I read about the future of travel and tourism is that it's going to get very personal, you know, very much where you can kind of control your environment. Road trips, you know, I've been reading that road trips are anticipated to, you know, to kind of take off. Do you expect that Napa Valley may be slightly better off because of our proximity to San Francisco or Sacramento, or even, you know, we're not that far a road trip even for some places in Southern California?
The short answer, yes. The medium long answer is we have seen that kind of recovery in the past, whether it be after the wildfires, after the major earthquake that we had, other things that have happened, whether it be recession, natural disasters. And we have seen what we call the drive market come back fairly quickly. And of course, we in the Napa Valley are an international tourist destination. That will probably take some time, right? Because people are going to be less comfortable getting on airplanes. They're going to be less, frankly, also financially impacted by this. I would see Bay Area travelers, I'd see California travelers that are able to drive here, whether it be for day trips or shorter overnight stays. And then we'll eventually get back to that national domestic travel and ultimately the international travel. But I think it will follow that same progression. And so our chambers and our city managers, the town manager, they're taking all that into account as we are putting our budget projections together and also our strategies for the business recovery strategies for how and to whom we are reaching out. So it will be those drive markets, the greater San Francisco Bay Area and throughout California. So our folks are working with Visit Napa Valley, Visit California, the State Chamber of Commerce, all those folks that have been looking at this. And unfortunately, we have some experience recovering from disasters, but that is actually going to pay off for us, I think, again this time.
Yeah. It does seem, though, just putting on your mayor of Yountville hat, your council member hat, that in spite of our good fortune of saving up for rainy days, it does seem like staff cuts and service cuts are inevitable in certainly in most California cities and towns. So I'd ask you, what considerations do you take into effect when you have to start thinking about those tough decisions? And are there anything that, you know, are there any sacred cows that just would never get touched in an era of budget or service reduction?
Well, what I would say is you can never say never, right? We are in an unprecedented situation. But there, based on what I have seen and heard from our colleagues throughout the state, and in particular in the North Bay area, they are having to make some painful staff cuts and other reductions in services. But I would say in virtually all cases, public safety is what they are working hardest to protect, because we have to be able to keep our folks safe. And so that's police or sheriff services, it's Cal Fire, and certainly public health through our clinics and hospitals, and how cities will sometimes interact, even own in some areas, their public health sector facilities. So that is probably the last sector that folks are looking at. Unfortunately, the areas that are first or earlier on would be some of those recreational services and programs, Our team here in Yountville has been amazing being able to transition online with a lot of our programming. No, it's not the same. No. And, you know, we are proud of our very close-knit community where people love to get together, physically socializing and interacting. And we can't do that right now. And that's really awkward and uncomfortable. But I just enjoyed, you know, a live concert on Facebook Live.
Yeah.
Where there were about 30 people watching live, and there have been 150 or so that have viewed the concert since. It was organized by Samantha Holland, our park and rec director. Mm-hmm. And there are those types of things where you can know, you know, right now we're not taking bus trips down to the theater in San Francisco or to a Giants game, but you are able to virtually get together and have some of the recreational experiences that most cities have had to cut back. We are seeing significant losses, regardless of whether businesses or cities are reliant on tourism. That's where our advocacy at the state level and the federal level come in. There are bills that are still being considered in Congress for additional funding. One of the biggest challenges for us, not just particularly to California or Napa County, but the fact that smaller cities, and when I say smaller, the threshold that was set by Congress was cities under 500,000 population were not eligible for the significant many, many hundreds of billions of dollars in economic recovery and healthcare expense reimbursement.
Yeah, I think I saw on your league website that 99% of the cities and towns in California fall below 500,000.
Right? Yeah, only six cities are above the 500,000 out of 482.
And so what are you trying to do? What are you doing to try and change that? How do we get, you know, obviously the needs of those six big cities are important. They're as important to them as ours are to us. But how do we kind of level that out and get better distribution to smaller cities and towns?
We continue to advocate with our state and federal legislators. And I would call out Congressman Mike Thompson in particular, who has co-signed onto a bill, H.R. 6467, which would answer this exact situation. It would be money that specifically would be directed to cities under 500,000 population, and also to extend it from expenses for the public health response to allow monies to go to the revenue losses that we have seen because of the mandatory business shutdown. So we have several bills in the state legislature, similarly with support from Senator Bill Dodd and Assemblymember Cecilia Aguiar-Curry. As a matter of fact, I have calls with them, with my fellow mayors and other electeds, each of the next 3 days, for example, to talk specifically about what are the specific hardships we are seeing and how we hope they are able to help us out. So a lot of that is just straight up money to help us recover the losses so we can continue to provide those fundamental municipal services. People get very comfortable with the fact that, let's just say the streets are clean and there are, you know, the water and sewer systems continue operating. You know it when they don't. And right. So it's those types of things that are critical that we're able to continue to fund. So there is a very rapid domino effect. If we don't get some significant financial support, where we're going to see cities going beyond those first stages of furloughs and service cuts that we just discussed to the ones that are even that much more painful.
So you're not a big fan of the let states and local governments go bankrupt and figure it out that way route?
No, I'm not a fan. I'll leave it at that.
Well, I mean, so much of what I've read is that's not even legally a possibility, right? I think Governor Cuomo was talking about how, no, we can't declare bankruptcy. You know, that's crazy, and it's pain. You know, it's just it is an ultimate cruel failure of imagination to say that's the only option you've got, you know, when we're bailing out so many other sectors of the economy.
Yeah, to be honest, we hear, especially at the federal level, that everyone seems to say this should not be politicized, but then we see the actions of some doing just that and making this political, and support going to certain states that have a particular demographic or political bent. I think that's where Governor Newsom has been excelling, frankly. We all know from the last several years, there's been a challenging relationship between the state of California and our federal administration, but there has been cooperation, and I will give credit to both sides. There's been reasonable cooperation to help get support for California and therefore all of our cities. It is very challenging, and it probably shouldn't be as challenging as it has been, but there's plenty of time to look back and find areas for criticism. But right now, we're still in this crisis, and it's not only just the public health crisis now, it's still a public health crisis, but now it's an economic crisis, and we're trying to do what we can and be as collaborative as possible. And we're seeing a lot of that support at the local level, where we are working together, sharing ideas, experiences, so that we can make things better for our...
Yeah, I've yet to encounter a crisis situation that gets solved through blaming. You know, blaming doesn't really fix any problems. Hey, I think you cut out there. Are you there?
Yes, we had a connection loss, and now we're back.
All right, so let's get a little bit more macro here. You know, just putting on your hat as a mayor, you know, not just the mayor of Yountville, but just as a mayor. So I'm going to read you a quote from a professor from MIT. He tweeted last week, quote, "Without an effective testing and tracing infrastructure in place, quote, reopening is a synonym for, quote, second wave of the pandemic." Do you agree with that? And what do you make of businesses that have decided to go ahead and open up anyway? We have a few examples of that locally.
I think there are two different questions in there. One, the first I would say is there is definitely a concern that I think is legitimate, that if we do not reopen smartly, carefully, and make sure that there are health and safety protocols in place, then I would agree we significantly elevate the risk of additional exposure. What I will also say, though, is with smart, strategic reopening, very thoughtful, with not just business leaders, but also public health officials, we can reopen. We can bring back some economic activity. And that's what is already happening here in Napa County. As I mentioned earlier, we see some great communication happening through the chambers of commerce, as well as elected city and town officials and the public health officer and county public health in general. One of the concerns is as we increase testing and broaden the population that will be tested, and that's already happening, so that it's not just the essential workers, it's not just first responders and those that have the very specific symptoms of COVID-19, right. We are already seeing an expansion into the general public sector for asymptomatic testing. That is going to reassure us, not guarantee us, but reassure us the breadth of exposure that has happened in our populations here in the county. And it gives us some level of assurance to be able to have folks go back to work in these low and medium risk businesses. So it does not guarantee that someone that has a negative test today stays healthy and not affected later, but it does help us get a baseline for how much of our population.
All right, we're going to pause here for just a minute. I think what I'm going to try and do is reconnect with John. So we're going to take a quick timeout here.
Okay, I'm back.
There he is. Okay.
We are still seeing a slowing or a leveling off of our positive tests, even though we are seeing a dramatic increase in the number of tests. So As we are able to test the general population, we're going to have a much better and clearer idea of how we can move and how quickly we can move back to broadening of our outdoor activities as well as our business activities.
I mean, I have a couple of reactions when I see these, you know, businesses opening back up on their own. I mean, on the one hand, I'm kind of amazed at how long people have complied with these stay-at-home orders and have dealt with the impacts of essentially an economy that's shut off. But on the other hand, you know, I understand the dire circumstances of people who run their own businesses, as somebody who runs his own business, you know, that you're just sitting there watching your business disappear in front of you. And so I'm actually surprised that more businesses aren't deciding to just take law into their own hands and open up anyway. We've had a few notable examples up here in Napa County, but really not that many.
And I agree that it's in a way, it's a bit reckless from a public health and safety perspective to go out on one's own.
Right.
It's not just about the individual exposure to the folks that work or potentially visit that open business, but then when those folks leave and may not realize that they've been exposed, it then has that exponential spread. I also absolutely understand, believe me, when almost 75% of our revenue in Yountville has turned off based on our closures, I understand the severity and the urgency, as you mentioned, personally knowing when you own your own business, you feel it in a very, very personal way. But we all feel that too. And the long game is, I think, what we're looking at. And that's where we have this extra pressure that most of us are saying, if we just show a little more patience, we are going to be that much more able to be open more completely, more quickly. And so, but I totally understand folks that now we've just gone through another, early May, rent's due, lease payments are due. Folks still maybe don't have some of the federal and state financial support. And every week, every month, it's harder and harder. And it's going to be, a real shame to see if certain businesses can't come back from this. So I certainly understand both sides. But through all this, the decisions have been principally focused on public health first and the economy next. And so that continues to be the order of priority as I see it.
Yeah. Let me ask you, last couple of questions. How much of life will return to what we knew before? And what changes are you noticing that you think are long-term? I mean, for example, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world that public agencies and courts have now had to open themselves up for virtual kind of meetings. You know, I mean, yeah, going and sitting through a 4-hour planning commission meeting is fun for some people, but why shouldn't more people be able to just join and participate remotely?
I think we do have some good learnings from this. I agree that we are going to see a different business, especially, I would say, commercial activity. Folks that forever really have gone to an office setting, we are seeing in very real time, it's not as critical as we all believed it would be. Now, granted, when you're forced into a teleconference situation and virtual meetings, there is a discipline that we're all showing that we're, especially because of technology and the fact that we can all see each other.
And ourselves. That's the worst part. It's not so much seeing each other. It's that I read somewhere that, you know, appointments for things like facelifts and lip injections are way up in some places because people are seeing how they look all the time.
Well, I'm not even going to go there, but
maybe not for you and me, but some, for I some.
Know, I know my hair has never been this long, even when I was in the 80s. I'm not going back to that look unless I can't.
I'm just wearing a hat. I'm just covering it up with a hat. That's I'm taking the cheater's way out.
I think hat sales are probably surging as well. But you know, I think that we are learning. You know, another thing is in public education. How do you fill a room with 35 or 30 kids when they're sitting right next to each other? Is that the smartest way to educate? I'm not going to advocate that all children are now homeschooling, because that doesn't work either when parents have to go to work.
Right.
But there are ways that we can take some of the things that are working out of necessity right now. And, you know, we are seeing amazing positive impacts on the environment, for example.
Right.
Rapid air quality changes, greenhouse gas reductions, you know, all these, for years we've been talking about, how do we do this? Well, nobody really was pushing for a pandemic.
Right. We just did, right? We just, yeah, this is like my kids and my students, you know, all the millennials, they're like, you know, for years and years, you all you say is it can't be done, it can't be done, it can't be done. And all of a sudden, you know, they're hearing birds chirping, you know, in Shanghai. What do you mean it can't be done?
Yeah, and I think that the point I was getting to is that once we're out of the crisis, will people's behavior still be as controlled as it is? And maybe not. But, you know, certainly things like going to a park, going to any open space, there will be closer interaction than what is happening right now. I don't see that ever being the new condition of a park where you have separation. That's not what we're talking about. I think we are talking about how can we operate more smartly and frankly, in a healthier way.
Yeah.
Just think about all the things we now have stopped taking for granted in terms of opening a door or using any kind of public seating area or, you know, anything like that, sharing an elevator.
Right.
You know, when you go to the gas station, you pick up the handle of the pump and you think twice about how clean it is or isn't. And so, you know, some of these things are probably good learnings. Maybe we don't have the regular influenza and cold seasons that we have traditionally gone through because we are being smarter about our hygiene. Mm-hmm. So there are going to be some things that I think we can take from this. Hopefully, we will be able to apply those very efficiently, effectively, but also get back to, you know, kind of that human interaction that is also critical, not only for business activity, but socially. Again, bringing it back to Napa County and to Yountville, we love being able to hang out and just chat, whether it's on the street or in a park or walking on our path system.
Yep.
And we aren't able to do that right now. And we're all very anxious to get back to that. But the one thing I just want to emphasize again is, while we are very fortunate throughout Napa County that this health crisis has not been as broad and impactful in a negative way as many others, we have to respect and honor the public health workers that are continuing to put themselves at risk. Every time there's a test taken down at the Napa Expo, or thankfully we've been able to do some testing up here at the California Veterans Home.
Right.
Those folks are, you know, voluntarily putting themselves in an area that could result in exposure. And so we that aren't taking those jobs owe it to those that are to be patient and be respectful of all the safety protocols that we're being asked to follow.
Well, and frankly, I think we owe them more than
you know, our thank yous, however vocal they are. I mean, these are people who are going in hazardous situations. You know, I'm one of these people who thinks they ought to be getting hazard pay to reflect the risk that they take and that they seem to take willingly. I mean, this is the thing about frontline workers, healthcare workers, even people who are working back of the house, who are still increasing their risk. You know, they're doing it eyes wide open, and I frankly think they should be compensated for that. But
well, I also see that we're looking at other business sectors doing something similar, like our restaurant communities,
right,
where they are feeding either whether it be first responders and healthcare workers, but also we have some of our restaurants right here in Yountville delivering meals to seniors that are in home isolation.
Right.
And they're not looking for a big PR news story either.
Well, and I'm sure it's not profitable business, you know, highly profitable business, if profitable at all.
And right now, not everyone can do that. But those that can have stepped up, and they know that they have a role to play in the community, and they're willing to play it.
So we're going to leave it there. John Dunbar, thank you very much. John is the chair of the California League of Cities, the mayor of the beautiful town of Yountville. Thanks, John, for joining me on the program.
Thank you, Larry, and I hope you and Deborah Rowe stay safe and healthy.
Thank you. You too. That's going to do it for today's program, and I want to thank you again for joining us on The Deep Dive. We're always happy to hear from you. Especially welcome your suggestions on future discussions and possible guests. There's a few materials that I've referred to on the show today that I encourage you to look at. First, go to the California League of Cities website, which has got good information about what cities and towns across California are looking for right now. There's also a very interesting publication called GEN, G-E-N, which comes out of Medium. And they've got a great piece this week called The Harsh Future of American Cities. It's less dire than the headline suggests, but it is a pretty thought-provoking piece about the way we're going to live and work and go to school and get our health care. So take a look at that. If you're like me, it'll help you from over-focusing on the here and now and begin to think about what's coming next and what we can do about it. Email us at deepdiveshow@winedownmedia.com, W-I-N-E, winedownmedia.com, on Twitter and Instagram at deepdiveshow. And of course, like us on Facebook. We are at Deep Dive Show. We're also on all of the podcast platforms now, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Go ahead and subscribe, Deep Dive Show with Larry Kamer. I appreciate all the help I get from Antonio DeWolk and all of our friends here at KVON Napa. I thank you again for joining us. I'm Larry Kamer, and we'll see you next time.